This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call on Thursday, June 1st, 2017. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when that's speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I turn the call over to Michael Fleming.
Thank you. And once again, to everyone, a good afternoon, good evening, and a good morning, chiming in from Tokyo, Japan. 6 a.m. here, and the weather is lovely. Welcome for this week. This is our second to last call before Joburg, the AKA meeting in Joburg, and I wanted to give everyone a warm welcome for being here to discuss. Today we will be roughly going over an introduction of the global public interest and discussing this strongly in relation to the public interest amendments. Before I begin, I'd like to ask anyone if there was if they have an updated SOI, like speak now or forever hold your peace, or you can just throw it to the chat. Hearing none, if you do have one, go ahead and put it into the chat, and we'll all be happy to note that the updated SOI. So moving into the global public interest, did we get the slides loaded into the, thank you. All right, lovely. Does everyone have access? Is it unsynced for everyone or just me? Line control. I don't mind either way. I just want to make sure everybody has access. Or I just want to make sure everyone's able to see the slides. Unsynced? Okay. Right. Perfect. So if everyone can put their view, their zoom at 75%, maybe 70% better. Excuse me one moment. Oh, wonderful. 70% seems to be very well. All right, just going through a small explanation on our subject today. So, one of the core governing principles in new GTLDs was mainly that they adhere to ICANN's mission and core values. And a part of this was, of course, the subject of the global public interest. Within Article Section 1.2b of ICANN's mission and core values, it states that introducing and promoting competition and the registration of domain names were practical and beneficial to the public interest as identified in the bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. Well, within the 2007 final report on the GNSO policy, it explored this area and it found that only recommendation 6 had any mention of the public interest in this regard. However, this was only providing guidance on the subject, and it was very much limited to the composition of the string, not regarding the behavior of the registrar. Strings must not be contrary to generally accepted legal terms relating to morality and public order that are recognized under international principles of law. Moving on. So this topic became very heated up. Sorry, I thought I was being commented on my voice. So everyone can hear me clearly, just checking, correct? Seems like it, okay. So this topic became very heated up right from the GAC Toronto communique in October of 2012. And there are a few important factors to note in this. First of all, the applicant guidebook does provide a way for the GAC to provide early warning advice on Niji Utility applications in regards to their public policy issues, or that raise public policy issues. At this time, the GAC requested from the board clarification on two areas. One, the extent to which applications would be able to modify their applications as a result of early warnings, and two, how ICANN will ensure that any commitments made by applicants in their applications or as a result of any subsequent changes will be overseen and enforced by ICANN. And as a part of this, the GAC advised the ICANN board that it is necessary for all of these statements of commitment and objectives to be transformed into binding contractual commitments, subject to compliance oversight by ICANN. Also, the GAC expects that applicants would not be penalized where their standard of position, where the standard provisions of a contract are amended in order to meet specific obligations entered into in order to meet governmental concerns. Moving on to the next page. So kind of in a historical or a, what came out of this was that in November 2012, the GAC filed and ICANN published 242 early warnings on individual Niji Utility applications. From this, there were revisions made to propose the registry agreement that introduced the public interest commitments as Spec 11 of the registry agreement. So the PIC spec is a mechanism to allow registry operators to commit certain statements made by the registry operator in its application for the GTLD, as well as to specify additional public interest commitments in their case, transferring such commitments into binding contractual obligations that may be enforced by ICANN through a new dispute resolution mechanism. And then to ask the applicants to submit PICs to be posted for public comment. PICs were posted in March of 2013, and it is very important to note that this was 1 week prior to the objection period closing, with 499 PIC specs were being received. At the time, of course, this was a very, very debatable subject. It still is, of course, but there were a lot of comments, especially in regards to the process and the public comment procedure for how ICANN was going about and requesting feedback in regards to the PICs, PIC process. And coming out of all of this, what was introduced were two things. One was the mandatory PICs as well as the volunteer PICs. So the mandatory PICs specifically state the following. First of all, a registry operator will use only ICANN-accredited registrars that are party to the registrar accreditation agreement approved by the ICANN Board of Directors on 27 June 2013 and registering domain names. A list of such registrars shall be maintained by ICANN on ICANN's website. Registry operator also agrees to perform the following specific public interest commitments, which commitments shall be enforceable by ICANN and through the PICDRP. I know there is a long, but for the sake of those that are on the audio, I will go through each of them individually. Kathy, you're asking if there's a link to the this document. I'm afraid not. Emily, were we able to upload that to the wiki page, although I think we'll probably do that after the fact. We'll provide if they have a link in there. Oh, perfect. Okay, Steve is going to put that up to the wiki page. He'll give you that link, Kathy. Thank you. So let me go through these, and just please bear with me. So first of all, number one was including this registrar agreement that requires registrar to include in their registration agreements a provision prohibiting registered name holders from distributing malware, abusively operating botnets, phishing, piracy, trademark or copyright infringement, fraudulent or deceptive practices, counterfeiting or otherwise engaging in activity contrary to applicable law, and providing, parentheses, consistent with applicable law and any related procedures. Consequences for such activities included suspension of the domain name, including suspension of the domain name. Number two, registry operator will periodically conduct technical analysis to assess whether domains in the TLD are being used to perpetrate security threats such as farming, phishing, malware, and botnets. Registry operator will maintain statistical reports on the number of security threats identified and the actions taken as a result of the provided of the periodic security checks. Registry operator will maintain these reports and will provide them to ICANN upon request. Number three, registry operator will operate the TLD in a transparent manner consistent with general principles of openness and non-discrimination by establishing, publishing, and adhering to the clear registration policies. Number four, registry operator of a generic string, TLD, may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TLD that limit registrations exclusively to a single person or entity and or that person's or entity's affiliates, parentheses, as identified in Section 2.9C of the Registry Agreement. Generic string means a generic string means a string consisting of a word or term that denominates or describes a general class of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things as opposed to distinguishing a specific brand of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things from those of others. And thank you for bearing with me. Then we have the volunteer picks. This was introduced into the Section 4 of Specific 11. So for whatever picks that were posted as what registry operator would commit to prior to, were then pulled into the were tied into the registry agreement as binding, but they were voluntary in nature. Of course, there were no guidance. There's no guidance given on what should or shouldn't be in the picks, but many of them were filed as a result of the early warning advice, and mainly fall into the following four types: one, anti-abuse; two, additional RPMs; three, geographic arrest protections; and four, many reserved the right as at sole discretion to modify or even eliminate picks. So this brings some questions in regards to related to this subject. So the ICANN board did provide, I'm not going to use advice, but suggestions on areas for how we could develop policy in regards to this. This was introduced in November 17th, 2014, on planning for future GTLD application rounds. Specifically, it states, the new GTLD program was developed in the spirit of advancing the public interest. However, existing policy of advice does not define the application of public interest analysis as a guideline for evaluation determinations on individual applications. Issues such as those identified in DAC advice on safeguards, the development of public interest commitments, PICs, and associated questions of contractual compliance and enforcement may be an area for the policy development. So in other words, global public interest really wasn't explored that well in the new GTLD program. However, the issues that were just stated relate heavily to the issue, so we should consider it in that regard. This guidance can be found. This can be found on the following page provided. And so, the rationale for what we need. The rationale for why we are looking at this is that mainly the fact that ICANN's mission, being of a technical nature, it is rooted around that fact of how ICANN should fulfill that mission, while taking into account the public interest. This topic, of course, global public interest, is not limited just to the new GTLD program. And it's noted that perhaps we should integrate the definition of global public interest and policies supporting these interests as they are developed in the wider community. I will note that there is a ICANN's 5-year strategic plan does look at development and implementation of a global public interest framework. Does say that we should take this into account. However, I will be quick to note that as of right now, there is no, from what I could see, there was no specific definition. There was no specific definition or framework in place. However, what we could consider this further along in the future, but at the current time, Jeff's hand is not raised. Jeff, would you like to speak?
This is Jeff. Sorry, no, I just my hand went up and I tried to get it down, and I think you addressed it. Sorry about that. My computer is freezing on
me. Okay, perfect. All right, good luck with that. So at the current time, we don't have a lot to work with in regards to that definition. So let's consider this in regards to the public interest specifically. The PIG specifically. So I have introduced a few questions on the next page. These are questions that don't come out of any relevant area, but rather those that the leadership team and I have put together. So right now, the public interest commitments are not incorporated into policy. Specifically, our goal is to determine what is an adequate way of applying the public interest analysis as a guideline for evaluation determinations on individual applications. And noting that the public interest commitments were not based upon policy, and they did receive a lot of feedback in both support and opposition, we need to consider whether or not that the adopted public interest commitments are sufficient to protect the public interest, and if not, what is sufficient to protect the public interest, or do we even need to address that? Here are some important questions that come to mind. One, are the public interest commitments as they are now sufficient in addressing the concerns of protecting the public interest in regards to ICANN's mission? Two, if Specification 11 was adopted as it is now into policy, should volunteer PICs be required? 2A, could volunteer PICs be time limited? Meaning, could they only be affected over a certain amount of time? And 2B, should volunteer PICs be required, allowed at the application stage of a new GTLD? So that means, could a new GTLD applicant be allowed to, or should they be required to introduce PIC, what their public interest commitment is during the application phase? I think this question might overlap with Work Track 1 a little bit, but all the same, I did put it in here. Question 3, should PICs be incorporated into policy as a measure to protect the public interest? And question number 4, are there any other ways in which we can consider policy development in order to protect the public interest? So these are the questions. Would anyone like to raise their hand and speak in regards to these, provide their answer or opinion? Don't we'll all come at once, sir.
Michael, so it's Jupiter. I can't raise my hand. Sorry.
All right, Jeremy, you are free to speak. Go ahead.
I'm going to answer your question with a question, and hopefully we'll get a crowdsourced answer on this. Can somebody remind me how the PICs actually came about? Because my recollection is that, after GAC advice was forth, this was something that either the ICANN board or ICANN staff came up with and sort of just imposed upon applicants. I don't think there was ever a choice for applicants not to have, because there's a mandatory component. I think the only choice component to it was that you could voluntarily add to what became a mandatory PIC. Is that correct?
That is correct, Jim, but I think Jeff has a longer answer. I do see Alan's hand up first. Alan, is your answer in regards to Jim's question, or could we let Jeff go first? Oh, go ahead.
I can try to answer, but I also had some other comments. Why don't we let Jeff go first? His memory is probably better than mine.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks, Al. I'm not sure that's the case, but thanks. So that slide that was up there, and I know, Jim, you can't see it because you're not on, but after the GAC had issued 242 early warnings, the GAC and the Toronto communique said to the ICANN board, we need to find a way that you can put the things that these applicants are going to commit to into the contracts. And so Fadi, as one of his first acts of CEO, decided to create this notion of the PICs. And he posted that in February of 2013 as a way of addressing the GAC's Toronto communique, and then also said that basically a couple days later issued a call out for registries to voluntarily commit to public interest commitments that they would agree to be in contracts. And, of course, many of the registries, especially the ones that had early warnings against it, felt like they had to do something in order to address the GAC concerns. And so they were the ones, for the most part, that put in the PICs. And obviously many didn't, right? So you had 240, you had a few hundred, I think it was 499 TLDs submitted PICs. So that means obviously the vast majority did not. So it came out of pretty much Fadi's head, and but it was never policy. It was never anything that the GNSO or GNSO Council or anyone in the community had come up with. It was very kind of top-down, and so that's one of the reasons we're addressing it now and then Phil points out the Beijing communique. Right, so it was the Toronto communique that asked for a mechanism. Then you had the release of these PICs. Then you had the Beijing communique, which then went into more detail as to different categories and other types of TLDs it had comments on. So that's basically it. We're here to consider whether we should embed the notion of PICs into policy for future rounds or whether we should find some other mechanism. And thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm going to move to Alan. Jim, I hope that was a sufficient explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. Although Fadi's name was associated with it, I really don't know whether it was his idea or he simply put his name on it. But clearly the concept was created by the staff/board to address the issue of how do we address the concerns that were raised with some TLDs. And that generated the voluntary TLDs, which are not particularly impressive overall. The Beijing communique then identified specific TLDs that were subject to regulation in many jurisdictions and had public interest issues associated with them. And that ended up resulting in the mandatory PLDs that were applicable to some TLDs. And those, the board, I think the GAC asked for 8 specific constraints on some TLDs, a certain subset of them, and the board implemented a subset of that and did not fully implement them, but those became mandatory TLDs for that class of TLDs, mandatory PICs for that class of TLDs, rather. And I'll point out that both the GAC and the ALAC are still taking the position that those were not sufficient, and there are some TLDs, not necessarily from the ALAC point of view, not necessarily the full subset that the GAC identified, but some TLDs that deserve more protection than others. And therefore, consideration of that GAC and ALAC advice is one of the requirements of this PDP to look at, as well as for the CCT review team to look at. and presumably they also will be passing judgment on the importance, how important this is and how it should be implemented. So certainly from our point of view, when I say our, I mean the ALACS point of view, then I don't think we can go back on some levels of protection for some types of TLDs and some types of public interest issues. Exactly how we implement them and go forward, obviously, is the question on the board. But the GAC and the board and the ALAC agreed to not take further action on the existing TLDs with the understanding that these issues would be covered by this PDP and the CCT review team. So we certainly are looking at this with some interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And just for clarity, when you said that the ALAC still feels that the actions taken were sufficient, are you referring to the GAC category 1 and 2 advice? Or category 1, correct?
The only ones we focused on were the category 1, correct.
All right. Perfect. Thank you. So, Kathy, you have your hand raised, too. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to staff for posting the document so I could read it offline. I just wanted to share that my memory jives with Jeff's, that this was a FADI creation, and that he did that initially when we heard about the PICs, it was a place, it appeared to be intended as a place to put some kind of response to the GAC, so that if a new DTLD applicant did change their application response to the GAC, the sense was, you know, and Fadi was driving this, that there should be a place to codify it so it became part of the contract. I wanted to add one more historical element and note to this, which is that it went way beyond the GAC, and this is what still surprises me. When I talked to Alan before he left and others in ICANN's contract department, the voluntary PICs apparently had another element, and we know this when we review them and ask what are some of these things doing. For example, rights protection of IGOs and INGOs, something that's in policy now, what was put into a number of voluntary PICs, as was additional rights protection mechanisms, as your note showed. Apparently, and maybe someone here knows the number of days, the PICs were open, the voluntary PICs were open for a very short period of time, something like 30 days. And you could put anything you wanted, the kitchen sink, whether or not it's a public, has anything to do with the public interest, meaning the common interest, the general interest. There are lots of definitions of public interest. That is a term of art in many parts of the world that we could draw on. But it's pretty clear looking at a lot of the voluntary PICs that they had nothing to do with the public interest. They had something to do with somebody wanting to show someone else something and went in a number of really interesting directions, but often giving extra protection to intellectual property owners, which surprised the non-commercial user, it was a non-commercial stakeholder group. So if anything, I really think we should kind of stop the whole kitchen sink thing. There may be a legitimate place to put get responses to the GAC, but I don't think we should let anybody put anything in and call it a public interest commitment. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. We've got a few lined up now. First, Jeff, you go ahead, and then Paul McGrady, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And Kathy, just to kind of to go along with what Kathy said, so you have to put yourself in the applicant's mindset at that point of time. So it was all the applications were in 2012. It's now 2013, and applications are just starting to be evaluated. Everyone knows whether they're in a contention set or not. Some people, like I said, were scared that the GAC was going to have, quote, advice against their TLDs. So they put everything they could into those picks to try to make governments view them much more favorably. So that included RPMs, but also included if they thought that they were a community and wanted to boost their community evaluation, which hadn't happened yet, a bunch of communities put in their, quote, protections or the things that they had in their application already to look better. some actually put in letters of support and other things, especially if they knew they were in a contention set, again, to try to make them look better than anybody else. And so there's a whole bunch of things in these picks that perhaps wouldn't necessarily be in picks going forward because the some of the difficulties that were encountered then or the context wouldn't apply going forward. Presumably, we would do, if we had picks, we would do a pick process. Well, it depends, actually. So it depends on how we do picks. But Kathy's right in the sense that people put everything, including the kitchen sink, into them because they, again, A, wanted to get acceptance by the government and didn't want advice, or B, wanted to make themselves look better than others in contention sets. And so I hope if we do come up with we do keep the notion of picks that we can find a way where, as Kathy says, they're truly public interest commitments. But that said, we should still have a way if we want to, or at least we should address, putting on my chair hat, we should address the issue of how do you respond to GAC early warnings or GAC comments or public comments. Is there a mechanism in the application process to do that and to amend your application even as a binding commitment so that you or an applicant could address their concerns? Or should we not? And that's a question we need to tackle. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I have Paul McGrady and then Alan lined up. So, Paul, please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a question for Kathy. Can you give us an example of enhancements to intellectual property rights that came through the PIC? Thank you.
Would you like me to respond,
Kathy? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. The Donuts Protected Marks List is in some of the public interest commitments that it filed. In fact, I think it filed them for all of its GTLDs, but I haven't done a one-to-one match. IGOs, INGOs, you know, extraordinary that some people already blocked all IGOs in their public interest commitments. Not quite an IPR, an intellectual property right protection, but another one where, you know, going above and beyond and entering into, you know, GNSO consensus policy area. I have a list somewhere of just kind of crazy things and voluntary picks. If you want me to share it, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, thank you. That would be helpful because it's a significant claim that intellectual property rights were enhanced when the examples that you gave really weren't that. One was that, you know, Donuts makes money off their that thing that they do. I'm not sure how it enhances intellectual property rights. And then, of course, the NGO and IGOs are not a relevant example at all. So I think, it would be helpful to substantiate the claim. Thanks.
May I respond again? A protected marks list is blocking a string that's in the Trademark Clearinghouse across all of Donuts' GTLDs. That is a massive protection and one that was actually rejected as part of consensus policy. It's massive protection for IPR. That you pay for it is different, but to put it in PIC is an intellectual property protection. Absolutely.
If I can respond since she did, I don't think selling something to the trademark community, which was rejected during the RPM development stage, is an enhancement. I think adopting what the IRT proposed would have been, but certainly selling it to us after the fact isn't. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's leave that at that. Kathy, if you do have your that list, if you could share it, that would be very helpful. Thank you. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Alan Greenberg speaking. One can argue whether some of these things are public interest commitments. And I don't much care whether we call them public interest commitments or put them in some other place in a contract. I see absolutely nothing wrong with a registry deciding to implement certain policies and commit to keeping them there and putting them in the contract. Now, Donuts also said that anything in their public interest commitments could be changed after 2 years, I think. But other organizations did not put that escape clause in their public interest commitments. And whether we add a Spec 99 now, which says other commitments, and not construe them as public interest, I don't much care. But I really don't see why we would have a problem with a registry making some policy, which they can do in any case, but deciding they want to put it in their contract, which implies a commitment to it. So I'm not really sure why we care. Yes, it wasn't decided by consensus policy, but it's not imposed on the rest of them, which is what a consensus policy does. So I think this is a red herring. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. And it seems you have agreement from Sparrow. So this, Ellen, you've brought up a good point. The volunteer aspect that Donuts did put into, and I believe Donuts had, I just want to think, there were 499 public interest commitments, and I think out of those, 302 might have been from Donuts. Don't quote me on that. But that was a lot, quite a bit. And in regards to, I think, what Kathy was trying to bring up and kind of reflect on how Alan said that why we should be mind what they want to commit to, I think Kathy was trying to bring up that some of them couldn't necessarily pass as in the public interest. And so another important question to consider is that if these picks are voluntary, there are the mandatory ones now that are in the contract. If the picks are voluntary, how do you clear those, or how do those need to be evaluated whether or not they're in the public interest? But I think we need to look at two important aspects here. Is that one, where you do have there are the mandatory picks within the Spec 11, and there's the volunteer one. We should address both of those. But I think another question that might be better to ask is right here and right now is that, are the mandatory picks themselves sufficient in protecting the public interest, and should those be then baked into policy somehow? And then discussing on the volunteer picks themselves, I think that might be a question. I'm hearing a lot of feedback in regards to that, but should we look at the mandatory picks for now, the ones that are specifically in regards to, you know, using only ICANN-accredited registrars, only using making sure you're undergoing abuse, monitoring, and performing those checks and submitting that information to ICANN. Would anyone like to respond to whether or not the mandatory picks are sufficient? I'm good. Ellen, go ahead.
Thank you. The GAC and the ALEC have gone on record as saying that they are not for certain specific TLDs, and clearly there is judgment calls involved in which TLDs we're talking about, but both of us have made very strong statements saying that there are certain classes of TLDs not defined by our current categories or anything else. An attempt was done to categorize them based on the category numbers the GAC assigned to them, not well in my mind, but for certain categories, both of us have made very strong statements that the current picks are not sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And that's the current picks in regards to
the current
category one advice.
Those are the only ones we commented on, obviously. The GAC may have a wider statement on the other categories. I'm not in a position to speak on their behalf.
Ellen, could you, if possible, we tried looking for a lot of public comments, and shuffling through them there's so many. Would you be able to share the ALAC public comments with us in regards to this that they weren't sufficient? That would help us quite a bit.
We already have put them together in a compilation. I can ask the staff to try to pull out the specific ones on this subject, sure.
Perfect. Thank you. Jeff, would you, Would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks. So on the mandatory picks, and again, this is not I'm not commenting on the, you know, whether they should or shouldn't be there or justified or not. Just to say that for the mandatory picks that are in there now, there is some work already that's going on to talk at least about some of these. So for one and two, I believe, we should look to the work that's going on with Spec 11-3B conversations about these between the Public Safety Working Group and the registries, as well as I believe there should be an advisory coming out at some point that was agreed upon to talk about some more clarification of what's required under these picks. I think that's coming out fairly soon, so we need to take note of that. And then on the fourth one that's on slide, I want to say six, if that's right, the fourth one, which about generic strings, that's going to depend on where we come out with or where we come out on the whole generic, what do we call that issue, exclusive generics?
Closed
or
generic.
Thanks, closed generics, yes. So that fourth one is going to be subject to however we come out on that. The other thing I will add is that there's been one PICDRP case filed to date, and in that PICDRP case, it's interesting because they, although they found fraudulent activity by the registry in that case, technically there wasn't much under the contract that would allow the ICANN to send a breach notice based on fraud alone. So that's an interesting thing that we might want to tackle in looking at that case and how it came out. But actual comments on how the PICDRP works, I think, is more for work track three. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Would anyone else like to comment on the 1, 2, 3, and 4? Yes, 1, 2, 3, and 4. The requirement to use ICANN accredited register 2013, ICANN accredited, wait, sorry, first of all, for the mandatory, I'm just going to go over the mandatory ones really quick and summarize them very, very quickly. So one was that the registry operator has to use an ICANN accredited registrar signed the 2013 RAA, they can only use a registrar that signed the 2013 RAA. There is also the requirement to monitor for abuse, report on it, and then there is the requirement for TLD to operate in an open, transparent manner, and then there's the mention of the generic string, which we are discussing elsewhere. Christina, what is that? Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Christina. I just wanted to, I don't know to what extent it'll be captured otherwise, but I just wanted to note the comment that I put in the chat, namely that I have been in several sessions and ICANN meetings where I know that Tony Harris has expressed a concern and business obstacles that he has encountered in connection with the Spec 11 requirement that registry operator only use ICANN accredited registrars. I don't see him on this list. I don't think he's been active in the work group or this work track. And I think, frankly, given how often I have heard him express this concern, I think it would be helpful if perhaps someone could reach out to him and I let him know that we are discussing this issue and that this would be a good opportunity for him to provide his perspective on it, because he clearly has one. And I think, you know, the issue shouldn't be skipped simply because he isn't on the call. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. That's sound advice. We'll take it back with the leadership team and see what we can't do. Ellen, go ahead. And then Kathy Clark.
Thank you. I'm
I can't speak on behalf of Tony, but I'm aware of at least part of the concern, and part of the concern is the requirement in the PIC is not really to use ICANN accredited registrars, but to use ones who are on the 2013 RAA. And the rationale was the 2013 RAA imposed a number of controls on registrars that were not in prior ones, among others, to say that resellers had to follow all the rules also. In prior RAAs, there were claims made that essentially the registrar could absolve themselves of responsibility if they simply subcontracted to resellers. And so the RAA put a number of controls on which essentially were relied on in the GTLD process. The 2013 RAA, however, also added some other requirements on registrars, some of them which are moderately expensive. And as a result, there are registrars, it's certainly been noted in South America, although perhaps other jurisdictions also, that registrars are giving up their business and becoming resellers, so they don't have to, they don't incur the costs that are associated with those other parts of the 2013 RAA. And that certainly is part of the issue that I think is among Tony's concern. I may not be capturing it properly. In terms of are these mandatory PICs necessary, I'm not sure how we could do without something like number one, which put an obligation on registries not to be homes for distribution of malware, or at least not knowingly. So I don't think there's really any chance of getting rid of it completely. How we transform it is a different issue. Thank you.
Alan, thank you. Kathy, you got your hand back up. Go ahead.
Yeah, although if people I wanted to talk about number one, but if you want to continue the discussion about ICANN accredited registrars, I'd be happy to wait on this.
Would anyone like to comment on the accredited registrar issue, or can Kathy jump in on number one, as in the abuse monitoring one? Correct?
Right.
So I don't see anyone wanting to discuss the issue on the registrar, although Jeff does note that Jeff does note that by the next time the next window opens, all registrar, everyone should be on the 2013 RAA. But Kathy, go ahead. Please.
Okay, great. I'm addressing mandatory PIC number one, which is including in the registrar agreement that requires registrars to include in the registration agreement, so with the registrant, provisions prohibiting registered name holders from distributing malware, botnets, phishing, piracy, trademark, or copyright infringement, fraudulent and deceptive practices, counterfeiting. And I'll stop there. So this was done before the new ICANN bylaws, and it seems like we probably have to reevaluate them in light of the new ICANN bylaws, because ICANN kind of really clearly set a box around its mission in the new bylaws as part of the transition. And at the risk of boring everyone to death, because I know you've read this all, especially this group, the group on this call has read this extensively, I opened it up. So Section 1.1 of our mission under the new bylaws, the ones adopted by the board on May 27, 2016, you know, the mission of ICANN is to ensure the stable and secure operation of the Internet's unique identifier systems. And then it goes on to define what those are. But in the next section, it says, ICANN shall not act outside its mission. And the next section says, ICANN shall not regulate services that use the Internet's unique identifiers or the content that such services carry or provide. So the content is really what things like copyright, fraud, deceptive practices, and counterfeit run to is the content. So I do think we have to ask someone, whether it's legal or otherwise, you know, is this mandatory PIC in all of its language consistent with, you know, how we've defined the new ICANN mission? And think about it not just as the words here, but then what goes through the PICDRP, what ICANN is enforcing. And you know, ICANN can't enforce something outside its mission. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And Jeff, would you like to respond?
Yes, thank you. Sorry. Yeah, Kathy, on that note, I believe that was specifically addressed. I have to look in the bylaws, but I believe the PICs and those types of things were grandfathered in. That was the subject of a whole bunch of conversations, and they got very heated. I'll have to look and see where, because I cannot remember where the PICs are, but they were specifically exempted out so that they wouldn't be used as arguments like the one you're making. Not that I disagree or agree with the substance of what you're saying. I just, we need to go back to those bylaws because the conversations I remember specifically exempted out the PICs because people were afraid that adoption of the new bylaws would automatically make the PICs unenforceable. And so, again, I'm not taking away from the substance of that. It's just important that we get the complete story on what they did. And while others are talking, I'll try to find where that was grandfathered in. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. We are running close to the hour, so I have Kathy, and then I have Alan. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Jeff, you're absolutely right. Existing PICs were grandfathered in. I've talked to a lot of people about it, and they filled me in a little bit about the extensive discussions. But it don't, I mean, as you said so often, what we're doing is going forward to the next round. I don't think any of that grandfathering covers what's to come. I think it's just in the past. But and I'm not sure if that's what Avery is saying as well in the chat. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And it looks like Trang has posted the section 1.1D2 of the bylaws. So, Jeff, if you are looking for it, then I think Trang might have given you the best location for that. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, Kathy is right on that. The grandfathering is for existing contracts and follow-ons to them. So it doesn't apply to new contracts that we write sometime in the future. Or ones that it also doesn't apply to ones that were in the process of being signed. But the issue of whether this kind of clause is within scope or not, I would certainly argue that confidence in the domain name system depends on people presuming that the internet is not a complete free for all. So I think I could certainly argue that it is within scope, but that's an interesting discussion that will be had, and probably not just in this PDP. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Trang has kindly posted that 1.1.D.4, the provision it says that ICANN shall have the ability to negotiate, enter into, and enforce agreements, including public interest commitments, with any party in service of its mission. So that does kind of start to tie into the being able to act outside of, maybe act outside of that, but also to, in the public interest, to be able to enter into consistent public interest commitments going forward, perhaps depending on how they tie into the contract and policy. Jeff, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and then in A2, so 1.1D, A2, I think it is, basically says, so you're right, it covers all the agreements before October 1, 2016, but then it says any registry agreement or registrar accreditation agreement not encompassed by number one above, to the extent its terms do not vary materially from the form of registry agreement or registrar accreditation agreement that existed on October 1, 2016. So the way I think ICANN would interpret that, but again, we can ask. I mean, I think we should to confirm. But I think if this PIC was put into future agreements, I think that my guess is ICANN would take the view that that would qualify under the exemption in that A2. So I don't, we can ask, and maybe Steve, if we can ask legal just to clarify that for the next call, that would be helpful. But that's my guess is that's probably what they would argue. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff, and I think that's a great action item. Steve, English. Oh, Steve, if we could do that, it would be very great. Thank you. I do see it is the top of the hour. Does anyone have anything left that they must absolutely say now, and if they don't, they're never going to feel the same again? Comment or... Okay, Kathy's already saying goodbye. So I'm ready to close on out. I just want to say thank you very much for everyone coming out this week, and we've had a great discussion about the Global Public Interest Commitments, and we have gotten some data back from ICANN Compliance on the vertical integration issue, so I believe that we'll be jumping back on that for our next call, which will be on the 15th, I believe the 15th of June. Anyways, 2 weeks from here, two weeks from now. Thank you, everyone, for the 3 weeks of consistent meetings, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. This is Michael Fleming chiming out from Tokyo saying good evening, good night, and farewell.
And good morning, Michael. Bye.
Good morning.
Thank you, everyone. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day.